Hello and welcome to Recovery Internet Radio, broadcast direct from Straight Up Studios here in beautiful Bow Valley, Illinois. What about our sponsor?
Oh, welcome to our newest sponsor, Rose Painting and Drywall. Very nice, adding color to Chicagoland since 1965. Very good man.
Now tonight's show, another dirty drop. Now what? Also, just like to say, we announced that we would have our website up and running. It is almost completed, so we can expect that next week, and that'll be recoveryinternetradio.com, and it'll have links to the show and past shows and all sorts of great stuff, so check it out. And here's Rick.
People, thank you. And people could get to us that way directly. They can go to the website, and then there'll be a link to the show.
Oh, yeah?
Okay. That's good. Thanks for joining us tonight, this beautiful Sunday night where we are every Sunday night at 8 o'clock. And as Chris said, our show tonight is Another Dirty Drop, Now What? And for those of you who don't know, I thought I'd explain that a dirty drop means if you take a pee test and there's drugs in it, that's dirty. Just in case, you know, just for our listening audience, the people who are listening to our show may or may not know that, but...
I did not know that. I had to look it up. I did not know.
Yeah, so, see? And I also want to mention our last show had Heroin Relapse and Recovery had over 450 listens, which we were very happy about. And we've had over 3,500 listens since we started. So
Wow. We're
very pleased with our ability to reach people that might not otherwise here, get this information. So we're happy about that. And I also want to say thank you to, as I do every week, Brendan O, and whose band provides our intro music. And as long as he lets me do it, we'll keep doing it. And also tonight, our musical guests are Mike and Caitlin. Mike's been here before. Well, Caitlin's been here before, too. So they're going to do some stuff for us. And if... you wish to call a show, you can call with a comment or a question or whatever by calling 323-792-2977. And as it turns out, that's the same number every darn week. So we're pretty happy about that. You can check us out on Twitter. You can follow us on Twitter at Rick Atwater or like us on my Facebook page. You can also check out at blogtalkradio.com, Straight Stuff on Addictions. And I guess the one last thing I'll say before we get started here with our guest tonight is we put a question up on Twitter every week that relates to the show. Sometimes I get it up sooner, sometimes I get it up later. I think it might have been put up a little earlier today. Anyway, so we'll try to do better on that. And our guest tonight is Judge Michael Fedier. And we're glad that he could make it. And so thank you for coming, Mike.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
Mike, you are the new drug court judge.
Yes.
That's what were you before that?
I'm special assignment. I'm still special assignment. Which means that I cover for other judges who are on vacation or if there's a conflict. And I'm still in that role now, but now I do the drug court, which we kicked off December 1st of 2011. And
was that ahead of schedule? I think.
Yeah, the statute. I mean, in Illinois, the legislature passed a statute which required all judicial circuits. We're in the 22nd judicial circuit. To have a drug court by January 1, 2012. And our court administrator, Dan Wallace, and our specialty courts coordinator, Scott Block, along with Judge Michael Sullivan, our chief judge, and Sharon Prather, our presiding criminal judge, as well as probation, et cetera, they've been working on this program for like 2 years, doing the research, getting the training. And so we were well ahead of the curve compared to a lot of circuits.
Just out of curiosity, why did the Illinois legislature change its mind and mandate drug courts. What happened?
Well, I'm not sure what the reason was for their change in position, but the preamble of the legislation, which is essentially whenever you look at a statute, in this case drug courts, there's an opening paragraph that essentially states why the legislature is passing this law. And they recognize in that preamble that traditional criminal justice courts just could not help people who were addicted through the traditional arrest, prosecution, sentencing. The cost of litigating these people and housing these folks in penitentiaries and stuff were so significant, and the risk of reoffending was so high that the legislature finally realized that they needed to do something different. And drug courts have been around since 1989. They first started in Florida, Miami. And so they decided to take that route and require all circuits in the state to implement a drug court.
Well, it makes sense. It makes sense. It's like it almost scares me how much sense it makes.
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazingly wise decision.
Yeah, and the wording went from May to August.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Exactly.
That's all they did in the law?
Yep. It's I mean, drug courts have been around, and I'm not. There's been a lot of circuits that have had drug courts for a number of years.
Yeah. Didn't Kane County have a drug court?
Yeah, Kane County, and there's a county down south that's escaping me now, but. There are other counties in the state that have had drug courts for a number of years. The legislature did require all circuits to have drug courts, and I think it's, you know, a really wise decision, and I'm glad they did.
Yeah, and so what I guess what I'd like to do is get a handle on how it works. What's the mechanism, or, you know.
Sure.
You know, how does it work?
Well, we're considered a post-plea drug court, which means that it's a drug court probation. It's a type of probation, which means that in order for someone to be eligible, they have to plead guilty to a nonviolent felony.
And these are only adults, not juveniles.
Right. It's an adult drug court. That's right. So they have to be 18 years of age or older, and it has to be a nonviolent felony, and usually the cases that we see are thefts, because a lot of people engage in that behavior to generate money to feed their habits, or, you know, possession of drug, that type of thing. So
sales.
Well, that's a great question. There's in our rules that we've created, the state's attorney, because the state's attorney has an objection if in order for someone to get into drug court, both the state and the defense have to agree to it. It cannot just be ordered by the judge at the trial court level. And if someone is charged and pleads guilty to possession with intent to deliver, they may not be eligible, or the state may not agree to...
they may want a more of a penalty.
Well, they may just want to prosecute them the traditional way. And the reason for that is that that type of behavior, the sale of drugs, can jeopardize the other folks in the drug court program. We don't want someone who has the proclivity for dealing drugs, you know, jeopardizing the sobriety of our other applicants.
Sure. Hanging with people who take them regularly.
Exactly.
Yeah, bad, kind of a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's talk about a target audience, you know.
So, target-rich environment, I think.
That's right. So they plead guilty. The state's attorney and the defense both agree to drug court probation. They present it to the felony judge. The felony court has to accept the plea agreement.
And that's somebody different than you.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, our felony judges are judges Prather and Condon.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to accept the plea agreement. And then the felony judge admonishes the defendant about what this means and what you're expected to do, and then once the plea is accepted, usually that afternoon, because our drug court starts at 3 o'clock, they come down to our courtroom, and I welcome them into the drug court program and explain to them the three phases in very brief kind of broad brush, you know, strokes, because there's a lot going on for these folks to absorb.
They've just come from felony court.
Exactly.
Are they usually like are they feeling lucky?
Well, they're.
Or are they sweating bullet? I mean, you know.
They, you know, most of them. I think most folks that come down are just, you know, they're trying to get their bearings.
Yeah.
Know?
Okay.
And, but most of the people that come down, I think, are. Or they appear anyway to be grateful for this opportunity, you know.
I would think, because I mean, I didn't really realize that's a lot of hoops.
Yeah.
First of all, when you tell me you got to get the state's attorney's office and the defense to agree,
mm-hmm.
that's a pretty big hoop
yep.
to jump through in and of itself.
Yes.
And then the felony judge has to buy the agreement.
Exactly. And we also during because we have staffings every Thursday before drug court and. Yeah, a person who is being considered for drug court will be presented to us, and Heidi DeDemonico will have a whole write-up of, and she's our intake coordinator, of this person, their history, et cetera. And then we, you know, kind of informally say, yeah, we think this person would be a good candidate. So, yeah, there's a lot of hoops that they have to jump through.
Now, she's already met with them before you talk to them?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
When I see the I'll call them a participant.
Okay.
Because they're drug court participants. When I see the participant, they've been accepted into the drug court program.
Okay.
And,
so that means they've been through the intake. That's what.
Yep.
That's what Heidi does.
Yes, exactly. I mean, she does the evaluation. She presents it to us.
What is an evaluation? I mean, what's an evaluation going to look like to you? I mean, do you actually?
Yeah.
It's in front of you on the bench when they come in.
Yeah. I mean. She does an evaluation that I don't see because it's, you know, it's very term specific, you know,
right.
into the mental health field. But she'll give
We're
us
into
a synopsis.
The PCPs and the IODs.
Exactly.
Yeah,
okay.
Okay.
But she'll give us a synopsis, a history of the person, you know,
yeah.
their from their childhood through their adult, you know, their use patterns, the treatments that they've taken before, the different types of inpatient programs they've participated in. And then, you know, she'll summarize and say, I think this person is, you know, a good candidate for drug court, or I don't think this person is appropriate for drug court.
And most of these folks have been through treatments before.
Yeah, most of the people. I mean, one of the criteria that is that they have to be clinically an addict. I mean, clinically diagnosed as an
right.
addict. And so most people, in fact, I can't think of one exception right now, of the participants in the program have had prior drug or alcohol counseling
okay.
in their histories.
Multiple?
Yes, multiple. Yeah, I mean, most of these people have been arrested before. Most of these people have been required to go through alcohol and drug treatment before. And the arrests and the treatments are multiple.
I wonder what it is that makes, you know, that qualifies them. And maybe you can't really answer that. I don't know. But why this time? You know?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, we focus on what the high needs, high risk population.
Okay.
I mean, these people have a high risk of going back out there. They've already proven that. And they have a high level of, you know, they have a high level of need in terms of treatment. Most of the people that come into our program, we're the last stop before a lengthy term in the DOC, which
right.
is Department of Corrections.
Right. Thank you.
And so, you know, we want the hard cases. I mean, that's what the drug court is designed for, is the hard cases.
So these might be people who would, you know, in the vernacular, hit their bottom.
Yeah.
And that this is the last stop before.
Right. And you just hope and pray that that they realize that this is the last stop
right.
for DOC.
What's your take on that? Do you find that that's the case, or too early to tell?
You know, we've been in existence now for this is going on our eighth month, and yeah, I have to say that, you know, for most of the people, you know, we're the last stop before DOC. But there's there are people who come in and they're high risk, high need. Clearly addicts, but they've never had any criminal charges before.
Mm.
And so, in fact, we had a a meeting with the judges and Dan Wallace, who's a trial court administrator, Scott Block, and probation, state's attorney, et cetera. And we wanted to just kind of review our target population. And one of the questions is, well, what about folks that are high risk, high need, but aren't, you know, ready to go into the DOC if they mess up again? What about those folks? And it was the consensus of everyone that, you know, we want that person too, because if we can bring those that person into drug court and maybe turn them around, get them on the road to recovery, maybe we save them a lot of pain, maybe save their family a lot of pain.
Sure.
And
maybe the bottom for them was the use and the consequences
right.
to date rather than the
right.
just the threat of a long jail sentence.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, and that would be ideal.
Right.
But probably too early yet to tell whether that's going to be effective. And, I have a treatment background, so I kind of know that
sure.
people can be compliant sometimes for a long period of time when they know that their, you know, shorts are on fire.
Right, right. Exactly. Exactly, you know.
So it's like, okay, so we'll find out in some respects what's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah, and this drug program, I mean, there's three phases, and it's up to 24 months.
Okay.
And so it's a, like you said, can someone maintain this lifestyle, go without for 24 months? And that's a long time.
Was there some thought around the 24-month timeline of, like, why?
Well, because we wanted to give them as much sobriety. We wanted them an opportunity to give them as much sobriety, even if it's, you know, coerced with the threat of a jail sentence hanging over their head. We wanted to give them as much of a cushion as we could because the bigger the foundation, the better the foundation, the better chance they're going to have of maintaining that sober lifestyle when they don't come to see the judge every 2 weeks or month or whatever
sure.
it is.
Sure, that makes sense. Apparently we have a call. So
oh, okay.
Should we let's take a call and
probably
see?
Probably Scott Block.
Probably. Giving you some trouble.
Like, okay, it's three or four things you got wrong.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi.
My question is this. Why should addicts and alcoholics get a special court? Why aren't they their crimes charged or handled in the same way that other criminals are handled?
Okay. I think we can.
Yeah, well, speak that. Their crimes are handled the same way as, you know, anybody else's. I mean, they're charged, they're arrested, and they have to plead guilty to whatever the offense is. The whole purpose of drug court probation is these people are addicted to drugs, addicted to alcohol, and there's a very high probability that they're going to go out and reoffend, not because their criminal behavior, not because they want to, you know, steal something, or they do it to feed their habit. And the whole idea is if you help them cure the addiction, get treatment for the addiction, then the criminal behavior stops.
Okay, and so, caller, does that capture what you wanted to know?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Question. It's like you have, you know, we're talking about two things here. You know,
mm-hmm.
we're talking about a social, medical, personal problem.
Right.
And we're talking about criminal
right.
behavior. And we can't separate them.
Right. But what we've, you know, and I'm no expert, you know, I don't have your background certainly. And but what we've seen is that the criminal behavior is a symptom of the disease, not in all cases, but in a lot of these cases. You know, someone goes into Walmart and takes a 55-inch flat-screen TV and puts it under their arm and walks out the door with it. They're doing that. Sometimes they just like to steal, but sometimes what they try to do is they try to flip it for whatever they can get, you know, and then they go out and they feed their habits.
Sure.
And so for a lot of these folks, the criminal behavior is driven by the addiction.
Right.
And
well, and it's a, I mean, this is a big change.
Right.
This is a big change because I mean, it hasn't. I mean, you know, it hasn't always been like this. This is, I would call this an enlightened attitude.
Yes. Yes.
You know, it's an attitude of, we can't, you know, we can't separate these things out. We have to treat the we have to do something about the person mm-hmm. in order to deal with the criminal activity.
Right.
You know, and I don't think, in a lot of a lot of places, and the caller I think was speaking to this, that's hard for people to understand.
Yeah, and the whole, you know, and if these people, if, you know, heaven forbid they don't successfully complete the drug court, what happens is they go back before the felony judge and they get resentenced on the original charge. So it's not like they're getting a free pass.
They're going to get, if they don't do it, then they go back and pay the piper.
That's right.
What they were going to pay anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whatever they were facing before they got into drug court, they face.
What would they be likely to be facing? You said jail time?
Yeah, I mean, it all depends. I mean, these are all people who have pled guilty to felonies. So if they do jail time, it's very likely that they'll do time in the Department of Corrections. And
not just county time.
Not just county time. I mean, these some of these folks have pretty extensive criminal records. And so it's and the drug court program itself is very rigorous. And the whole idea, again, is if we can turn someone around and or if we can, you know, we don't do anything, but if these people turn themselves around, you know, with the help that we provide them with, you know, you got a law abiding citizen now. And that's a beautiful thing for everybody.
Yeah, I think there's more than a few people in the recovering community that have had the assistance of
mm-hmm.
the courts
mm-hmm.
in their recovery. Was that,
yes.
Was that politically?
Yeah.
Was that said
yes.
Well? Was that,
let me introduce
yeah.
you to AA.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I would suggest yeah. that you try, you
yeah.
know, this. Or, but yeah, I mean, that's been going on for a long time. Now we're talking about more structure. I want to get back to that, the 24-month thing, and
yeah.
and what you said was, it's almost like you're saying the longer you can hold the feet to the fire, the more likely. Is there any, do you know of any research off the top of your head about time on that?
There's been a lot of research in it. In fact, this whole program is evidence based,
mm-hmm.
and
say what that means.
Well, yeah, that's a fair request. Like I said, drug courts have been in existence for 20 years, and there's been a lot of research done about, you know, what works and what doesn't work
mm-hmm.
In the drug court world. And one of the things that they found is that the longer that a participant continues in the drug court program, and, you know, because drug court, we didn't really touch on it, but one of the things it requires is attendance at alcohol, AA or
mm-hmm.
NA,
okay.
Narcotics Anonymous, or HA, Heroin Anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
There's inpatient counseling in the beginning, contact with the probation department, random drug screens, public service work, and they get to see me either twice a month or once a month, depending on which phase they're in. So there's a lot of structure, you know, there's a lot of moving parts, and,
mm-hmm.
and these people are constantly reporting to someone.
Okay.
And so, you know, the longer that someone is in that environment and they're accountable to a whole number of people, and people are watching them and, you know, watching what they do and holding them accountable for what they do, they'll, you know, the longer we are allowed to do that, the better their chances of recovering, acquiring the skills
mm-hmm.
so that they can just do it themselves.
Sure.
Once they graduate from
sure.
the program.
And apparently that this has been, it's been determined that like a 24 month period gives people a good shot at
right.
continuing their recovery,
exactly.
as opposed to 9 months or a year. Or
exactly.
2 years is a 2 years is a marker.
Yeah, it's good. And the other thing too is we want to get them into the program as quickly as possible. That's another
get them into
the drug court program.
Okay, from the time of offense or from
right. Well, from the time that they're charged to the time that they get into the program, we want to make that time period as short as possible.
And what's the thinking on that?
Well, again, the research has shown that the faster you can get someone into drug court and they can correlate the crime to the disease, the better their recovery.
The better chance maybe they can make the connection, then the light comes on.
Exactly.
I got it. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we had an arm wrestle with the defense bar, and because their position was like, look, we just get the case, and we want to look at the discovery. You know, they're in lawyer mode, and we want to see what defenses are available.
Look at the discovery. Can you
fill
that out a little bit for us?
I mean, it's a valid point that they're making. They're saying, look, we have a client to represent. And so if you're going to charge my guy, I got hired, I want to see what evidence you have against my client. So discovery includes police reports, the names of witnesses, if there is contraband taken from my client, like drugs or something else, we want to see what the tests look like. You know, maybe we want to test it ourselves. You know, we want to interview these witnesses. And all of this takes time. I can't, evaluate a case in 14 days. Or 30 days or whatever it is.
Because it wouldn't give them a chance to get all everything that the defense attorney get what they feel like they have coming here.
You know, maybe they want to challenge the search of the house or the car, and that requires a motion and a hearing. And so the defense, you know, had some problems with this. Let's get him into drug court as quickly as possible.
I see.
So, we went, we talked, not me necessarily so much, but like Dan Wallace, Scott Block, the state's attorney in the defense bar, talked, and, you know, there was a compromise so that, you know, the defense can size up the case, and at the same time we can still try to meet our goal in terms of getting him into the program as early as we can.
Because it might be advantageous from a defense point of view to have their client in drug court as opposed to going through the rigmarole and finding out that they had something they really didn't want to carry anyway.
The search was good.
The search was good. They were red-handed with a whole big bag full, and like that. Okay.
Not so good.
And I can see with these. Now, I have been told that a lot of the people that are going through the drug court currently are heroin addicted.
Yes, that's
like vast majority.
Yeah, vast majority.
Was that a surprise to you?
To me, yes. I mean, the whole drug court program has opened my eyes up in a lot of respects to, first of all, the age of the participants. Most of the folks are pretty young. The heroin is the extent. I knew it was a problem in this county because I've signed enough warrants for possession charges.
Right.
I didn't realize that. Out of 30 applicants, approximately, 27, 28 are heroin is their drug of choice. So,
I have to say, I'm fairly tuned into that community, and I'm surprised too. That's a big number.
It is.
That's a big number.
When you say, just really quick, when you say that a lot of the people that are participants in it are relatively young, what would you say, average ballpark age would be?
I would say, again, this is just my personal observation, but I would say the median age is, 28, something like that,
As young as?
I think we've got a couple of folks in their early 20s.
Okay.
These are kids,
Who already have sizable sheets.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think what we'll do is... We'll stop for the moment. We've covered a lot of ground, and it's good. And I'm going to – you guys need a minute to get yourself together, or are you ready to roll?
Yeah.
You're good?
Yeah.
All right. So, Mike and Kate, what are you going to do?
Pink Floyd, Wish You Were Here.
Wish You Were Here, Pink Floyd. All right. Have Addict.
back and play for us in the end, huh?
Oh, come on. Please. I forgot one quick thing. I wanted to get a plug in to for a friend of mine. His name is Bob 10 Gallon Harper. And Bob, if you're listening, Bob, I had to go ahead with the 10 gallon thing. And Bob's a drummer, and his band is called Double Take, and they're really good. They play I don't know, they play a lot of pop stuff, but really good. They're really good singer. Bob's a great drummer, and his nickname is 10 Gallon because the kid that he learned to play drums on 2 5-gallon paint cans or whatever they're called.
You gotta start somewhere.
You gotta start somewhere.
Is he gonna be? We have some of his music that we can play for next week's show.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, he shot us a couple of a couple of songs. Perfect. We'll get at least one in there.
All right.
And so the plug is this: they're playing live at what the heck's the name of this place? Doesn't have a name on it.
They're playing live somewhere.
They're playing live. I'll tell you where it is. How about this? It's at 350 McHenry Road in Buffalo Grove, and it's September 8th. But the name of the place isn't on here. I can't remember what it is either. And he told me. But anyway, maybe I'll tell you next week. So we got a little time because it's not till September 8th. But we want you to go see Double Take, and we'll take it from there. So anyway, back to you, Judge Fedier, and. Yeah, are you gonna go?
We'll
see. If you're not too busy.
I think you know if it's 350 McHenry Road in Buffalo Grove.
Yeah.
At Escape Entertainment Center.
Okay.
All right.
Escape.
That's why you make the big bucks, escape. My friend. Yeah.
I'll put the link on the
good
website.
Work.
You'll put the link on the website. Okay. Escape. That's what it's called.
Or Escape. Possibly, but I imagine
if you speak Latin, I suspect it's Escape. But,
yeah.
Okay, thank you for that. Yeah. Appreciate it. So, I guess what I want to ask you is maybe ask you what you learned. What have you learned so far? That's kind of a big question, but what would you say?
You know, I was thinking about that today. One of the things that I've learned in doing the drug court is even sitting on the bench, I have no control over another person's recovery. I kind of, you know, you talk about sponsors and AA and NA, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I kind of view my role on the bench when most of the time is almost like a sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy the role. Mm-hmm. One of the things that the research has borne out is that oftentimes a participant's success in drug court is affected by the relationship that he or she has with the judge.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not your typical, you know, prosecutor, defense attorney, defendant in front of the bench. The attorneys do all the talking. The defendant just, you know, stands there and listens to the conversation. And then the judge gives a new date. The attorneys aren't in front of me. It's just the participant.
It's a lot more personal. It's you, you and them.
Me and them. And I try to, I just try to reach and find a connection with these folks. So we talk about the step that they're on. I ask them how many days of sobriety do they have. That's the mm-hmm. first question I ask.
Mm-hmm.
And
are they usually straight with you?
Oh, yes. 99.9% of people that come before me are straight with their sobriety days. And
yeah.
There was one person that gave me a number, and everyone just kind of looked at each other like, what's he talking about? But So you're sitting there trying to find a connection, and you get to learn about these people and their families, and so it's, you know, it's almost like I could take the robe off, you
mm-hmm.
know, and just sit down and talk to them. So you try to find a connection, and
most of the people that are, that come in front of me, I genuinely like. I mean, really good people.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see, you know, the type of person that they could become if they can, you know, get a handle on this addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And but no matter, you know, and if someone comes in, let's say they've gone out and relapsed and they come back before me, the other problem I have is, you know, how do I handle it, you know, from this interaction point? I mean, do I, you know, do I scold them? Do I say, oh, don't worry about it, you know, just forget about it, let's move on? I mean, different methods obviously work depending on the, you know, the person that's in front of you.
Tell me how you discriminate. How do you do that?
Well, a lot of it comes from, because right before court we have our staffings.
Right.
And, you know, I've got, you know, Heidi, I've got Charlene, she's at Centegra, you know, I've got Nicholas Hayes and Jody Kroner, they're our probation officers.
Mm-hmm. Are they strictly drug court connected, or do they have other
responsibilities? But there are our two drug court
designated
officers.
Yeah. Okay.
And they know these participants better than anybody. And so okay. I asked them, I mean, you know, how would they respond to this? How would they respond to that?
Right.
And they give me some, they give me some pretty good feedback on that.
Does it, is one of the criteria the participants' sincere attempt?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we expect relapse. I mean,
yeah.
We don't like it. We don't want it. But it's not unusual for, I mean, especially, you know, when you're dealing with a heroin addiction, it's going to happen, you
mm-hmm.
know. And so it's, you know, how do you handle it as a drug court team? You know, what consequence do you, you know, attach to that behavior? And then, you know, how do you try to convey to the participant, look, you know, I understand it's in the past, but you can't keep doing this.
Right.
So
what would happen if they did?
If they continue to use?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if they continue to use, eventually they'd use their way out the door into felony court on a resentence. But, you know.
Has that happened yet?
We've had some participants that have been discharged from the program, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But not, you know, and again, I need to be careful, but for a variety of reasons over and above relapse.
Okay.
And
yeah.
So getting back to the hardest, the original question was, what's the one thing I've learned? And again, the one thing that I've learned is, you know, you're powerless over people, places, and things, and
mm-hmm.
that holds true no matter who you are, mm-hmm. even if it's in your courtroom and you're the judge.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that there was some, there was a with drug court in another county, and the person that was in charge of that drug court, I think, didn't have the same attitude that you do about it, and I think that that's why that drug court ended up in trouble,
mm-hmm.
because there was more of an attitude of control than there was of understanding how truly powerless you are over
right.
another person's behavior.
Yeah.
That's a tough one to get.
It is a tough one to get.
You know, especially in your position.
Well, because, you know, you expect and demand compliance. You know,
yeah.
I ordered you to do this, and I ordered
right.
you to do that, and I expect you to, you know, and with addiction, you know, it doesn't matter because there's so many other things going on in that person's mind, and, you know, that they may tell you, yes, I will not do this anymore, and they might be, and I'm sure they are completely sincere, but the addiction is a pretty powerful foe.
And you can't measure sincerity.
Exactly.
I mean, how do you do that? Everybody's sincere in the moments
yeah.
that they tell you that they're going to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
mean it, right?
Right.
And
you don't know how deep that goes.
How deep does that go, you know?
Like, that's kind of, if we can maybe talk a little bit more about that. I know we kind of covered it, but, you know, when you were mentioning if someone isn't, you know, you set up the rules, this is what you have to abide by to be a participant
mm-hmm.
in this. You know, where is that line? You know what I mean? If someone relapses and is using, you know, sorry, you know, it doesn't sound like they're automatically back to facing the felony charge. That's maybe part of the program.
Right, exactly. I mean, there's a number of things that we can do. I mean, we've taken people who continue to relapse and we put them into inpatient,
mm-hmm.
you know. I mean,
we've taken people who continue to relapse or are hanging out with people from their old life, which wasn't that long ago,
right.
And we, you know, they've been sentenced to home confinement where, you know, they can't, they wear a bracelet, you can't leave the home except for treatment or for work, et cetera. There's a 10 o'clock curfew imposed on these folks. So, I mean, there are things that we can do to try to keep those relapses to a minimum or at least keep them out of that environment, you know.
So those are what you call sanctions?
Right, exactly.
Other sanctions?
Well, the home confinement.
Right.
I mean,
is the curfew across the board?
Curfew's across the board.
Yeah.
10 o'clock, no exceptions.
Right.
I
think my mom told me something like anything you're doing after 10 o'clock at night is probably not good. I've heard that.
I think I've used that line a few times.
I know a couple of things.
And she was right.
Yeah, she was absolutely.
I should have listened. But
yeah.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Whoop, there it is. But anyway, it just slipped out. Sorry.
That's okay. Whoop, there it is! Yeah.
No, it was out there.
That
was on the air.
Okay. So other things that you figure that you've learned. I mean, that's a huge lesson. I don't know, maybe that's enough for the first year.
Well, the other thing too is we've, as a team, you know, like the evidence. I go back to the it's an evidence based program. I listened to Scott Block too long and Dan Wallace, but we kind of drifted in terms of, you know, the type of applicant, the right person that, you know, that we want for our program, and so we want the person who is the high risk, high needs, tough nut, tough case,
mm-hmm.
you know, criminal record. I mean, we want those folks. I mean, mm-hmm. those are the people. Because one of the things that we do is Sergeant Michael Moraski, who's our liaison with the Sheriff's Department, really mm-hmm. nice guy,
mm-hmm.
Very, very capable, very competent guy. And he reaches out to the different departments in the county and says, hey, look, we've got John Smith here, we're thinking about bringing him into drug court. What do you think? And a lot of times officers will say, you know what, he was a pain in the butt, but we think he's perfect. But a lot of times they'll say, you know, this guy's given us so many problems and so many headaches, and he's got this resisting, and he did that, he did this, that we really think that he just get hammered. And then, you know, the sergeant will bring that to us and say, we don't, you know, and I've learned that, well, those are the people that we want. You know, we want those people that
The guys the cops are mad at.
Yep, we want the guys that are in pains in everybody's sides, including yeah. the law enforcement.
Right.
That's why the drug court was created.
That's interesting. And what's interesting to me is that you consult law enforcement about that, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I just think that that's, as far as, you know, as overall court procedures and other things, that that's unheard of.
Yeah, it's unusual.
Like, yeah, it's unusual. Maybe not unheard of, but unusual.
Yeah. What do you guys think?
Yeah, what do you guys think? And you know, who's the biggest pain in your behind?
Yeah.
Those are the guys we're looking for. That's an interesting process.
I like that.
But, you know, but those would be the guys, wouldn't they?
Those are the guys you want to try to turn around.
Sure. And that would have the most to lose if they didn't.
Right. And, you know, even if you do everything right as a drug court, and, you know, the success rate's still only 40-60%.
That's national. Mm-hmm.
But still, if you think about it, that's still a pretty good number of folks that, you know, got it turned around.
Well, what's that compared to, I mean, you know, for someone else in the same position that wouldn't have that opportunity, that would just go through the straight DOC route?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the statistics at my fingertips. I think I do. But the risk of recidivism for persons that are addicted and they go to prison, it's like in the 90s, you know, in terms of reusing and reoffending once they get out of prison. I mean, it's staggering.
Who wouldn't?
That's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Huge difference. Yeah,
it is.
Who wouldn't be appropriate? Like, I was thinking that the who wouldn't be appropriate would be the guys on this end who would be the bad actors.
Right.
And you're saying those are the guys you want. It's these guys on the other end that are usually not the appropriate ones for drug court.
Well, I mean, it's the low risk, low need folks, you know, the people that aren't addicted, those are not appropriate because research shows that, and I'm a bit of a parrot here, but, you know, if you take someone who doesn't have a drug or alcohol program, bring them into a problem and bring them into a program that deals with high risk, high needs people, that person's going to get worse.
Yeah.
The other thing is we want the tough nuts. If we don't take anyone charged with a violent offense,
right.
You know,
would be like assault or
criminal sexual assault or, you know, arson or, you know, anything, along those lines. I mean, we're
right.
Heavy duty,
yeah,
violent stuff. They're ineligible statutorily from participating in drug court.
Okay.
So we do, you know.
So that's that end. And
yeah.
Then the other end is people who are either not addicted or early in the problem,
right.
Where
right.
there hasn't been treatment and that kind of thing.
Exactly.
And does that, what percentage would you say that those two categories rule out? I mean, what does that leave you? Do you still have a sizable population,
yeah,
that's appropriate?
Yeah, we do. I mean, we do have a sizable population. And again, though, they have to be clinically addicts.
Right.
So I would say of that population, you're probably looking at, you know, 90% of clinically addict criminal behavior that are, you know, could be eligible for the drug court program.
All right. So just you've told us, you've probably given us most of the information along the way here, but could you walk through a case kind of like from the beginning to the end, like what, you know, you said what, how they got in, but maybe go through that again and then what happens and then, you know,
sure.
to present.
Yeah, the, you know, typically someone gets arrested, again, a nonviolent felony offense, it's usually a theft or a battery or a drug possession type of thing.
And these folks are then going to be recognized because they've been there before.
Right. I mean, yeah. And so they get arrested. We take referrals from a number of different sources. Law enforcement usually comes from the defense attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And they contact Scott Block and say, look, you know, we'd like this person to be considered for drug court. So they're evaluated to see if they're clinically addicted. There is a criminal background check run to see if they've had any of these disqualifier offenses within the last 10 years. The state's attorney's consulted. If the state's attorney and the defense both agree that this person would be an appropriate drug court candidate, then the person pleads guilty to the whatever they're charged with in the felony courtroom. And they're, you know, they're sentenced to drug court probation, and then they come down and they see me that day, and we start the process. They start in phase one. There's three phases. In phase one, you need a minimum of 30 days of sobriety, and you've got to see your probation officer. I think it's two or three times per week, and there's drops.
How often they drop?
Minimum of 2 times per week. Let me just double check.
That's a drug test.
Yeah, minimum.
Yeah,
per yeah week. Sorry. Yeah,
yep.
2 random and observed drug screens per week.
Uh-huh.
They
like
have to.
Better.
Yeah. They have to obtain a sponsor. Now,
mm-hmm.
We can't tell them you have to go into AA or you have to go into NA or AHA, but we can require that they attend a support group.
Mm-hmm.
And those are really the three biggies in this area, mainly
yeah.
AANA. They have to get a sponsor within 14 days, and they have to maintain a minimum of 30 days of sobriety in order to go from phase one to phase two. And then once they hit phase two, they still see the probation officer a couple times a week, do the drug screens a couple times a week. They have to continue in their 12-step plan program, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And then in order for them, they have to get a job or at least start making the plans to get a job. And then in order to go from phase two to phase three, they need a minimum of 6 months of sobriety. And right now, we don't have anyone in phase three.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of folks that likely are going to be moved on. And then once you get to phase three, you still do the probation visits and you do the drug screens. But then you only come to court once a month, and you need stable housing. You need, you know, your public service work should be completed, and you need, you know, 5 months of sobriety, additional months.
On top of what it took
right,
to qualify to
right,
get there in the
exactly,
first place.
Exactly. And then you're eligible for graduation.
That's a good process.
Yeah.
And that process is generally going to be a 24-month
usually,
deal.
You know, by the time it's all said and done, it's close.
Right. So you have to have nearly a year.
Mm-hmm. Under your belt.
Under your belt. And, yeah, okay. Well, it seems like, and then by that time you figure that people have some stability and
yep.
And are, you know, are ready to go.
That's the hope, yeah. That's the hope.
And we have not had
any drug court graduates yet.
Yeah, because we're only 9 months in.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, we've got a few folks in phase two.
Mm-hmm.
And no one in phase three yet, but hopefully that'll change in the next 30 to 60 days.
What's the reception of the 12-step community for people in the drug court process? I mean, do you know?
You know, the people that I've talked to in the 12-step community are all for it. The one thing I would like to see is more involvement by the 12-step community in terms of coming to court on drug court days.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to see that. I'd like to, you know, maybe talk to some of these folks, because I'm guessing that, you know, the people in my drug court, you know, go to the meetings maybe that these folks go to on a regular basis.
So you'd like to see them in the court?
I'd love to see them in the courtroom. I think that would be a great support system.
You hear that, guys?
Yeah.
Get out there.
I bet you you'll see some fairly soon.
That would be wonderful.
That's what I'm thinking. Now, we're gonna wrap this up here in just a second, but I guess I would like to just give you the opportunity to say if there's anything that you think that people need to know about drug court, or anything that you think that people in general could do better or do to help the process with the drug abuse problem in regards to drug court. Is there anything that anybody else can do?
Well, you know, in terms of the public at large, you know, the one caller that came in with the I thought it was a fair question. I mean, these people, the whole purpose of drug court is to get a certain segment of the population to stop committing criminal activities and to become productive members of society. You know, and I just encourage, you know, law enforcement and in particular and anyone else, that if they know of someone who has an alcohol or drug problem and that they've, you know, they're participating in criminal activity and this person's arrested, you know, feel free to contact the state's attorney and say, hey, look, I think this person has a drug problem. I think this person would be a wonderful candidate for drug court, you know.
Well, I appreciate that, and I think you're doing a good job along with all the people that you've mentioned, and I think you got most of the names right, actually.
Yeah, Lillian Wen is our public defender, and
mm-hmm.
Andy Mueller is our state's attorney, along with Dimitri Talamingras, and I got Michael Moransky, the sergeant for Sheriff's Department, Nick Kays. Jody Kroner, our probation officers. I mentioned Heidi's name. Sarah Baker, she's Scott's assistant.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Scott Brown. I think he's formerly with Family Services. And Charlene Shepherd, she's with Centegra. And then, of course, we've got Phil Daling, who's the head of probation, along with mm-hmm. Roger Bacon and Lori Danzig. They're all with probation. They're all, I mean, they're just an amazing group of people.
Well, my hat's off to all of them. And Judge Michael Feeder, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you very much, Rick.
Giving us the lowdown. And so thanks to all of you for joining us tonight. And you guys are going to play us out in a minute. I'm going to do my little exit, and then I'll have you play. But I will send out the link for the next show and the email as soon as I get it. I say that every week, and I usually send it out on Friday.
You'll know as soon as right now.
Right. So remember, live today, love yourself and your neighbor. And I'll let you guys play.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.